Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yesterday morning, Shinge Roshi said, I'm going to ask you to give a talk. And I said, I would love that. She didn't mention that she wanted me to do it today. So a little while later, I had actually just pulled in the driveway at home, and the phone rang. And it was Shinge Roshi. And she said, I would like you to give a talk tomorrow. Would you like to do it in the morning or in the afternoon? Here I am. I would like to dedicate this to my father, Philip Gordon, who passed away this past Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. I've obviously, as one does, been doing a lot of reflection. I was with my father until the very end. He wasn't a religious man by any stretch of the imagination. He was raised in a Jewish family, and he was bar mitzvahed, but they didn't practice, other than my grandmother keeping a kosher home. But he kind of did have a religion of sorts. He was a basketball coach, and he did that for 38 years. And had lots of success. Won state championships, for example. And as I think about him, I think about some of the things that he would say. For example, there is no I in team. It's a very important lesson. We don't do this. We don't do anything, in fact, by ourselves. In one way or another, there's a team, and we're part of it. He would also say, practice makes permanent, not perfect. As you may have heard, because if we practice incorrectly or insincerely, we just make that permanent. So if you have anger in your heart when you sit on the cushion, that anger will manifest in your life. I've been thinking about Bodhisattva's vow. When I, a student of Dharma, look at the real form of the universe, all is the never-failing manifestation of the mysterious truth of Tathagata. In any event, in any moment, and in any place, none can be other than the marvelous revelation of its glorious light. And then we just heard in the Diamond Sutra, this is everywhere, without differentiation or degree. My dad had a favorite poem. This poem is called The Indispensable Man. Could be the indispensable person, okay? Interestingly, it was written by a woman whose name was Saxon White Kessinger. He would always recite this at the closing of summer basketball camp as a reminder to all of the players. Sometime when you're feeling important, sometime when your ego's in bloom, sometime when you take it for granted, you're the best qualified in the room. Sometime when you feel that your going would leave an unfillable hole, just follow these simple instructions and see how they humble the soul. You take a bucket. And you fill it with water. And you put your hand in up to the wrist. And then you pull it out. And the hole that's remaining is a measure of how much you'll be missed. You can splash all you want when you enter. You may stir up the water galore, but wait, and in just 1 minute, it looks just the same as before. The moral of this quaint example is to do just the best that you can. Be proud of yourself, but remember, there is no indispensable man. Because of that poem, I learned at a young age never to take myself too seriously. I also learned from him to stand my ground. He would say, "Sammy, if you know that you're right, don't back down." That was usually followed by him chuckling to himself and saying, "That's gotten me in trouble more than a few times." But he would say, "That way, you won't have any regrets." He was born, from my perspective, at a different time. He was 89, so roughly 9 years older than Roshi. It was in the heart of the Great Depression in 1933. His family had humble beginnings. His mother and father were born in what he called the old country. And following World War II, they came to the United States from Lithuania and Poland, escaping persecution by hiding in hay wagons and hay lofts as they made their way across Northern Europe to ultimately come here to America. They were Jewish, and after World War I and leading up to World War II, it wasn't safe. Ultimately, they settled in Syracuse in the 15th Ward. And that's where my grandfather and grandmother met. When my father was little, they lived in a one-room apartment. That was my grandfather, Abe, or Abraham, my grandmother, Gertrude, and his two older sisters, Ruthie and Shirley. Dad would say that in the old country, they told stories of how the streets in America were paved with gold. They weren't. When my father was young, he would sometimes go to work with my grandfather, who sold cattle, and he drove a big truck to move the cattle around. One day, they stopped at a farm, and one of the farmers called my dad a dirty Jew. Well, my grandfather, a dirty Jew. My father, I think, was maybe 7 or 8, young. And in front of him, my grandfather nearly beat that man to death. He was a boxer, and in the old 15th Ward, he was known by the name Spider Lewis. And people knew not to mess with him. I think that's where my dad started to learn this idea of standing your ground, right? He would say to me, he called me Sammy, but he also called me Sambo. He would say, "Sambo, the most important thing is to be a good person. Practice the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated." And that, of course, meant not tolerating injustice of any kind. Growing up, most of my friends' parents were baby boomers. which is to say that my father was considerably older than theirs. In fact, often when he would take me places, people would say, "What is your grandson's name?" My parents were 13 years apart in age, which in my father's later years came in very handy because my mom was his primary caregiver. He was mostly independent, but if it weren't for my mom, he would have been in a nursing home. To put that age difference in perspective, 13 years, when my father was a freshman in college at St. Lawrence University, my mother was in kindergarten in Canton, which is where St. Lawrence University is. Of course, they didn't meet until much later. But because of my dad being from a different era, I think my experience of growing up was a bit different. I would say it was tough. A lot of my friends could get away with just about anything, but not me, and not my siblings. And I remember asking so many times, why? And he would say, "Y is a crooked letter." When I was younger, I was really frustrated by that statement. But later, I came to understand why. The why was because he loved us. And because there are many potential pitfalls along the journey of life. I was raised a Unitarian, and my mother is a fifth generation Unitarian, which is very, very unusual, which would make me a sixth generation Unitarian, which is even more unusual. One thing, if you don't know anything about Unitarians, we are raised to explore all faiths, including Christianity. So, for example, I was given a Bible when I was younger and encouraged to read it and make sense of it for myself. So when I think about this, what I just shared with you about the potential pitfalls along life's journey and my father's love, I think about this passage from the book of Matthew. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. This practice isn't easy. I was looking back on some of my writing, and I found this from 2017. attending session is always the same in the beginning. There's a feeling of trepidation. Am I going to be able to do it? What a silly thing. Do we feel this way about the rest of our lives? We just go through the motions. We get up, we eat, we work, we eat some more, we work some more, etc. And when we're forced to face each moment, we resist. What could be more simple? You get up, you chant, you seat, you sit, you eat, you work, you chant, you have a meeting, and you eat some more, and you do some more work, and then you listen to a talk, and you do some stretching. It all sounds so simple. And yet, how profound. We learn to open to each moment, to this eternal moment, to bask in the gift of what is. This is what we're doing here. Basking in the gift of this moment. Session is a way of reminding ourselves that this moment is always right here. And it's the only place where we can act. There is no way back and no way to reach forward. Only this moment, infinitely unfolding with outstretched arms. Have you ever noticed how exhausting it is when you're just concerned about how things will work themselves out? When we are open to this moment, this void of exhaustion is exhausted and replaced with gassho, a deep bow of reverence for the gift of this moment. My peers in high school called my dad Physical Phil. And it wasn't because he taught phys ed. It was because he didn't take any BS. I remember one day in particular, my friends came running to find me in the high school in Chittenango, where I grew up. They said, "Sam, come quick, it's your dad." So they brought me to the high school gym, and my father had a student pinned up against the bleachers with his feet dangling off the floor. Turns out that student had told him to go F himself, which was a bad idea. I think for that student's sake, he was lucky my friends came and got me, because I'm not sure my father would have listened to anyone else. But for all his toughness, he had a tender side. He always saw the best in people and always wanted the best for people. He was always there to lift your head up when your chin was down. And if he thought you were taking a wrong turn, he would let you know. He had an indefatigable spirit. Say that three times fast. After undergoing open heart surgery, he had a quadruple bypass. I remember going to visit him in the hospital. There were tubes everywhere, and his body was pretty beat up. But there was a twinkle in his eye. And he joked with us and the hospital staff. Even at the end, after a particularly bad day, he had appeared near death. Then my mom heard a familiar cry, "Elna, the Yankees are on. I want to watch the game." And he did. He approached death as he approached life without complaint, without regret, and without fear. About a week ago, this past Tuesday, he had another bad day. He was very agitated. I was at work. And I raced home to see him. They couldn't get him under control, so they put me on the phone. And I said, "Dad, you need to lie down." And he did. When I got home, I went to his side, and he looked at me and said, "Did you do a good job today?" And I said, "Yes, I did, Dad. I did a good job today." And he said, "That's my boy." And then he looked at me and he said, "I want to go, but I'm not sure if I'm ready." And I said, "Well, Dad, you have always said, when the man upstairs pulls your ticket, it's your time to go." And he looked at me and he said, "Do you believe that?" And I said, "Yes. When it's your time, it is your time." And he nodded. He didn't say much more after that. He could only get a few words out, like, I love you. We also think he was coaching his final basketball game because he kept saying, "Let's go!" His life ended surrounded by his family, me, my two brothers, my children. His friends kept coming to visit. He had touched so many lives. Even watching him approach death was an inspiration.
This has been a Zen Studies Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.